And then the last one is seeing opportunities or jobs in your own life. So it's you're going around and think of how many entrepreneurship success stories come from this one thing alone. There was a job that I had in my life. I solved the problem and people said, hey, I have that problem too. Can I pay you to get the job solved? Sure, why not? And it just grows and grows and grows.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Frozen Soft Serve here in Utah. They service everywhere from Ogden to Nephi. And the best part is they make rentals super easy. They bring in the soft serve for you, the machines, they pack it out, and then enjoy their 7 flavors of Dole Whip and all of the soft serve that you can eat. It's great for businesses, customer appreciation, and employee appreciation days. And the best part is you don't have to do anything except call them and reserve it. So go to frozensoftserve.com. That's frozen with a PH. Check out the link in the description of this podcast episode. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Excata Professional House Cleaning LLC here in Utah. The best part about a clean house, in my opinion, is when you don't have to do it yourself. Excata Professional House Cleaning LLC does everything from deep cleans to move in, move outs to commercial cleaning. And the best part is when you mention this podcast, The Thinking Project, you save $30 off your first cleaning. So go check them out. Excata Professional Housekeeping LLC.com. $30 off. Thank you so much for listening. And remember to support our sponsors. All right, cool. We're rolling, Zach. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, my pleasure, man.
Yeah, I really I'm glad that we got connected. I'm glad that we got to meet it. It feels like every time I do a podcast with someone new, we just click. There's something magical about being on a podcast. So I appreciate you being here.
Oh, I love it, man. Podcasts are a magical medium that a lot of people like. I know I sound like a kiss up right now. I promise I'm not. Yeah, you're right. It's just like, it's so entertaining. Like, and I feel like you connect with people in a really meaningful way that you don't get to through a lot of other channels.
Yeah. I actually really enjoy podcasting as like a sales, like lead gen kind of thing. Like I'm actually working on a YouTube video right now where it's like a vlog type, like a documentary type, mm-hmm. but it's just me like inviting a bunch of people on a podcast to see how well, to like show people that you can like close deals with it. And I know it's kind of like the ulterior motive thing and you don't really want one, but it's a great way to like open the door to a conversation that you wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And you have a podcast, right?
I actually don't have a podcast, oh, but maybe I should start one.
I thought I saw on there like podcasting. No, everybody should have a podcast. It's like great. It's like really good for your personal brand and in general. So, okay. That's cool, man. But it kind of goes along with what you're really good at. And it's a great segue into that. As far as like creating a customer centered process in your business, tell us a little bit about like what you do and how that idea kind of benefits, consumers in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I am a customer-centric operations expert, right? So what I do is I work with these high 6, low 7-figure businesses that are really trying hard to scale, but they can't quite cross that 7-figure, 8-figure threshold, right? They've got quality, profitability, and these scaling problems. And I help them fix those through their operations. But what we really do, and this is a secret sauce here, Chris, or Dalton. So get ready here. I don't know why I just called you Chris. I apologize. So this is the secret sauce here, Dalton, is we understand the real reason why your customers are hiring your product or service. And then we build your strategy and your operations around that. And then the scaling happens naturally at that point.
Yeah. And I like that you mentioned that. What was that? You know, I've heard that too. Like what job is your company, you know, what job is a prospect hiring your company to do? And that's a really interesting way to think about it. I think that, it's a really good frame, like change of mind versus like, what problems do you solve? Because I think it just
or pain points.
Yeah. What I think it does is it kind of flips it into from a like, what can I do? Or like, what do I offer? Versus like, that question is like, all right, how can I help kind of thing? And like, what do people really need? Because there's a lot of cool business ideas out there that serve no purpose, right? They're like,
oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so it's kind of interesting to think about.
So I'll give you two examples of that, because this is really interesting. You know, you talk about how this is this really interesting perspective. The people that I talk with, the circles that I run in, we call it demand side sales instead of supply side sales. See, supply side sales is all about, I've got this supply and I got to move supply. So what features and benefits do I have to add to do that? I use the example of if you get on Google right now, you can search for Marilyn Monroe cat painting. And there's like a dozen of these paintings. And it's someone has taken like the iconic Marilyn Monroe hair and her beauty spot, right? And they turn it into a painting. And it's like, I would not buy that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you use this traditional supply side sales mentality, then you're saying, well, what features and benefits do I need to add to this picture so you're going to buy it? I'm sorry. I'm never going to buy that painting. Right. But if you flip it and you look at it from the demand side, then you say, what is the job that I am hiring art in my house to do? And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to innovate and I'm going to build that or create that. And then I'm going to sell it to you so that you're actually making progress in your life. See, Simon Sinek says people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And I think he's mistaken, right? Because if you think about the last time you bought a toaster, Dalton, were you joining some perfect toast movement?
Yeah, no.
No, right? Like you just wanted toasted bread. See, Jobs theory is fundamentally people don't buy your product or service. They hire it to help them make progress in their life. And that's what we're all about with this customer-centric operations.
Yeah. And it's an interesting way to think about it. I definitely think that's a good take. I mean, I think that's really interesting way to put it, because I've never been a fan of like the whole find your why thing. Just because it's to me, there's a lot of like, you know, overrated. Like, I've never been a fan either of like follow your passion or like figure out what you're passionate about.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like, but when you focus on like service, that can be very fulfilling. But you know, at the same time, service is very fulfilling. But it's also like really hard, and like it's not something that you would necessarily be passionate about, because I feel like passion is kind of like gas, right? Like it eventually will run out and you got to find something new or find a way to reignite your passion or something. And but if it's something that you're just like, you know, you got to do, right? Like a job that you got hired to do or whatever, like you're going to stick through like the hard times and the down times.
Well, exactly. I think that orienting yourself around the customer too, like think of the impact that you're able to measure at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, we do what we do. Yes, we do what we do to earn money, and we want to earn money, and that's important. But a lot of times we do what we do because we want to have an impact in the world. We want to make other people's lives better. And a lot of times it's like, well, I'm a marketer. Okay, but what does that mean? Like, what is the impact that you're having? But if you look at it and you say, I help small businesses get the attention that they deserve so that they can have the impact that they should, that's a lot more meaningful. That's something that people can, you know, they can sink their teeth into. They can connect with that on a deeper level. And you know, so when I was younger, I had an idea for an app, and this app, this was in like 2012. So there wasn't Instacart, and they didn't have like the deliver groceries to your home option. They didn't have the at the grocery store pickup kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the idea was pretty simple. It was, let's just create an app that maps your route through the grocery store so that you can get to what you want and then get out. Right. And I thought, oh, this will be great. And I talked to a ton of people, and they're all like, oh, I love that idea. That's a brilliant idea. it went nowhere.
Sure.
It was a swing and a miss, man. And it was because I didn't understand the job that my actual customer would be hiring me to do. See, the user wasn't the customer. The user was just the user. The customer was the people who are going to be paying me money, and that was the grocery stores. And they want the grocery store to be like a labyrinth. They deliberately put the milk, cheese, and eggs at the very back corner, the farthest corner they can from the door, so that you have to go through the whole store to get it and hope that that you're going to make a couple of impulse purchases along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real.
I wished I would have understood that, because, you know, that would have changed how I approached the job and how I approached things. And see, I had a similar situation a couple of years later after I had discovered jobs theory. And this was, we had someone who was the user or the consumer of what we did, but they weren't the customer. We had someone who would refer those users over to us, and they were the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And the consumer, the user, had a very different job from the customer. And when we understood what the customer's job was versus what the user's job was, we were able to innovate and to design the operations and the strategy of the organization so that it would have the impact that it needed to have. And as a result, right, the operations combined with that, we took the business out of receivership, which is basically bankruptcy. We took the business out of receivership and turned it into an 8-figure business in 4 years.
Wow. That's really nice, man. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And it,
it's,
and it
oh,
was,
go ahead.
That it was that frame of mind, that shift of like to the customer.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the understanding of who is our customer really, and what do they want us to do?
Yeah. How do you find that information out? Like, how do you, I mean, obviously you can like go stand outside a milkshake shop and ask people what job they're hiring a milkshake to do. But
that's a deep cut, Dalton. That's a deep cut.
That is. but I feel like, is that how you do it? You just get boots on the ground, or is there a better way to do it?
So there are a couple of different ways that you can do this. So you refer to the infamous milkshake story by Clay Christensen. And yeah. For your listeners who don't know, very briefly, they got hired to figure out what to do to help people buy more milkshakes.
Yeah.
And they were literally interviewing people as they were going in and out of this restaurant at 6 a.m. to understand, what on earth are you doing buying a milkshake at 6 a.m.?
Yeah.
But there are a couple of other ways that you can find it. So one is unusual uses. So you're going to look at what you do, and you're going to look for, like, what are the ways that your customers are using your product or service in a really unique way? So Arm & Hammer did this with baking soda back in the 60s and 70s. Because their sales were starting to slip. And what they found is that people were using it for deodorizing purposes. They were using it for cleaning purposes. And basically what they did is they said, oh, wow, this opens up a whole new like range of products that we can offer. So they started with deodorant, toothpaste, laundry detergent, cleaning supplies, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Just because they looked for that unusual use. Another one is just zoning in on the things that we don't want to do. So it's like, what is there in your life that you really hate doing, right? And or what is there in your customer's life that they hate doing, and what can you do to do that job? Identifying workarounds is another one, and this one's actually a really beneficial one. So this is, there is a problem that's in place and people are using a Band-Aid to do it. I used to have a really good example of this, and I'm blanking on one right now, and I apologize. If I think of it, I'll come back to it. But it's basically, you know, there is a problem in your life and you have been able to jury-rig some kind of a tool so that you can get the job done until a better solution presents itself.
Yeah.
Another one is non-consumption. So this is where people, they have this job, but instead of solving the problem, they just don't buy anything because they don't believe that anything can do the job satisfactorily. And then the last one is seeing opportunities or jobs in your own life. So it's you're going around and think of how many entrepreneurship success stories come from this one thing alone. There was a job that I had in my life. I solved the problem and people said, hey, I have that problem too. Can I pay you to get the job solved? Sure, why not? And it just grows and grows and grows. How many success stories do we have of that? I mean, geez, hundreds of thousands?
Yeah. Yeah, there's quite a few. That's a really good way to start. I've interviewed a lot of CEOs and founders, and that's one of the common themes too. You kind of just look around and see what needs to be fixed and then, you know, get it done and figure out a way to monetize it. If it's a big enough job that, you know, needs to be done or whatever. But definitely, one that comes to my mind was Susan Peterson from Freshly Picked, the baby bag company, the baby moccasins. Yeah, that was her. Yeah. She just started her story was she actually saw one of her friends sewing in her house and selling stuff on Etsy. And then she was like, well, I can do that. And I don't have a backpack. Like, I'm a new mom and there's nothing really that was made for like new mom bags at the time. And so
yeah,
that's what she did. And that look at Freshly Picked, man. I mean, they're freaking unreal.
Oh yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like, I see this problem in my own life. I go out and I start doing it for myself and then other people see it and they want to pick up on it. Great example. You know, but this all comes back to the key point of you have to get out of your office. You cannot figure this stuff out in isolation. And I'm a big fan of eating your own dog food, you know, drinking your own Kool-Aid. So I personally, I have these conversations with people on a regular basis to try and understand, because when you're looking to understand the job, you can't just say, hey, why did you do this thing? Right? You have to be able to contextualize it because jobs are pretty complex. There's social impact, there's emotional impact, and there's this functional aspect of the job. And then you have to understand the forces that are acting in favor of them changing versus in favor of them staying the same. And like, there's a whole timeline. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have these conversations with people and they're largely unscripted. The only question that I go into it is, so you had a really crappy day one day, Dalton. Like, it was an awful day. Like, geez, that was a doozy of a day.
Yeah.
And on that day you had a problem and this day just highlighted this problem and you decided that's it. I have to solve this problem. If I don't solve this problem, I will never be happy again. Tell me about that day. Tell me about, you know, what caused that change for you. And then you just listen.
Yeah.
And then when they say things like, well, my computer wasn't going very fast. Well, you say, okay, so help me understand. What does that mean? That's a little bit vague, right? Fast means different to different people. Yeah. Or, you know, I was really hungry and I didn't have any options. Well, you know, help me understand what that means. Did you literally have no food in your house or,
right,
you know, right? So you're unpacking that and you're understanding that story so that you can understand, you know, what are the social impact implications of what this is? What are the functional implications? What are the emotional implications? So that you can kind of build this picture of where they were in this struggling moment.
Mm-hmm.
What was the job that they were trying to get done? And that job is basically, I'm at this place. I want to be at this place. The job is the bridge to get there. And so you have to have these conversations. And most of the time, to be quite honest, for me, they take about 60 minutes. Because you cannot in less than that time flesh out all the information. And this is not your traditional market research stuff that you're doing. This is more like like FBI negotiation and interrogation. Like, yeah, this is really like you're a documentary filmmaker and you're trying to understand what's going on in these people's lives that caused this change. Because the reason why jobs theory is so powerful is it's all causative. it's not correlative. And there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, the big one is that the fallacy, right? The correlation doesn't equal causation, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that something, you know, looks the same, doesn't mean that they caused each other, right? So, yeah, I think that's interesting. What, how do you think we got to this point, and kind of missed jobs theory and kind of, and dove into maybe the correlation part you know, just kind of like this hustle thing. I was talking to a friend today about something similar. And so I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
So, I'd be curious to hear what your and your friend's thoughts were, but for me, this kind of goes back to the idea of big data. So it's like data, we have data out the wazoo, man. Like we can get so much data on people. I have a buddy who, like, if you wanted, you could go and buy credit card data from, from Visa. And like, you could use credit card data to market to people and to basically pinpoint exactly who the types of people are who are going to spend on your stuff. Like, it's scary the level of data we have. There's a story about Target sending, I don't know if you've heard this story, but Target Target sent out a mailer of a woman who was pregnant, and Target knew that she was pregnant before she did. Right. Like, anyway.
Crazy story. Crazy story.
Yeah.
They knew she was pregnant because of what she was buying.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Wild.
So we have a crap ton of data. There's a follow-up to that story, which was she was an underage teen. She was like 17 and her dad got the mailer. and I think they ended up suing Target or something like that. Anyways. So we have this massive amount of data, and it makes it really, really easy to have this crutch built in where we can say, well, why would I go to all the effort of understanding and interviewing the job that these customers are hiring me to do when I can fall back on this big data and just review, 10,000, 100,000 rows of data, find some really, really strong correlations, and then just send out a bunch of mailers. So it's kind of lazy marketing. Not to say that it doesn't work, because it has worked in the past, but it's, the efficacy is going down. You notice that Google just had what I call the cookie apocalypse, which is they're no longer honoring these third-party cookie data gathering tools. And so everybody's got to go to firsthand data gathering sources, which is going to totally revamp the game in marketing. But it's that wide accessibility of data that made people really lazy.
Yeah.
But there's a huge problem with that.
Yeah. I like that point because it is. Yeah. I think data does make, but I also think we've, my friend and I were talking earlier, we've just kind of come full circle where I'm in sales, been in sales for like a decade. Right. So like the quickest way to, 5 million or 10 million, your first 5 or 10 million is selling, like, and just being relentless and filling up your calendar. Right. And then, but what happens after that? Right. Like, it's a very different. So there's a book I love called, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. So it's a very different, you know what I mean? It's very different. 0 to 10 is not the same as 10 to 50 or 50 to 100. Right. Like, right. I just think we kind of got stuck in this idea that like, we don't need processes and procedures, or like, we kind of got caught up in the transactional sale, which is really kind of funny. Because when I broke into tech, they were like, this isn't a transactional sale. And then when I got into tech, I was like, well, you're making it feel like it is, though. I think my favorite, like my thing, my highest value probably in my life is empathy. And I feel like social media and community is coming full circle, because when social media started, right, it was, you could connect with anybody in the world. And now social media has come around to where like, no, it's like build a community around you, build a follow, you know what I mean? Like make people want to stay, and like word of mouth marketing is coming back in a big way. Facebook paid ads are like, I tell people, like, if you're under 10 or 20 million, you shouldn't even run a paid ad, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's just a waste of money. Might as well just flush it down the toilet.
Well, I think that's really interesting because, you know, I think that I love what you're saying about it won't build this relationship with your customer, and it won't build like long longevity in your customer. And
Yeah.
I think you're totally right because this data is very transactional, just like you talked about. It's
Yeah.
very much here, I have this thing. Do you want this thing? You know, but it's not like, hey, let me take the time to get to understand you, to know really what your problems are and to help make your life a little bit easier. And it causes a lot of problems, but people who implement jobs theory are able to see massive growth and the customers stay.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in tech for a while too, and churn was one of the biggest problems that we have. Tech churn is a huge problem. And it's because a lot of times, there's this disconnect between what dev pushes and the job that the customer is actually hiring that software to do.
Right.
And so when dev comes out and they say, you know, tell us what features we should add, you know, how should we change this thing? Then sales says, hey, you know, our customers are saying this, and sales, dev says, well, that's great. I think we should add this, you know, but you know, tell me what you think our customers would like us to add, right? So there's this disconnect. But it's really interesting because there was an Irish SaaS company called Intercom that when they were at 5 million market cap, they started implementing jobs theory. And it was about 10 years ago that they started implementing jobs theory. And they found that the customer had these four basic jobs that they were hiring this software to do. And it's very simple. It's kind of like a mix between Podium with voice over IP and stuff like that. So they found that these customers were hiring Podium or Intercom to do these four different jobs. And they said, okay, we are not selling based off of features and benefits. We're selling based off of the job. So if you have this job, you're paying this much, and you know, we're helping you set up according to that job. Churn went to the floor. Like churn was no longer a problem. And then the other part of this was in 10 years, they scaled from being that 5 million market cap to now they're worth over $10.7 billion.
It's very impressive. And I think it just goes back to this idea of like just empathy. Just like put yourself in the customer's shoes, figure out what's going on, and then make it work. You know what I mean? And then a lot changes, like you said. And I think one of the other things that my friend and I were discussing, and that's interesting here, is like we just kind of get caught up in our own story. Like, I want to be Forbes 30 under 30 or Utah 20 under 20 or whatever, right? Like, and there's nothing wrong with trying to achieve that, or do something, you know, that's worthwhile and like leaving a legacy. But I mean, when you talk about leaving a legacy, which I hate talking about, but it would be the idea then would be to do something outside of yourself that brought a group together, right? Like, leave them with values that will bring them together. And it was interesting, Consumer Summit's coming up here in Utah. Last year was their first year. The theme was, what was really interesting was they said consumers are starting to do business with companies, or are leaning more towards doing business with companies that they share values with. And that's kind of like this jobs thing, right? It's like, look, I don't really want to do business anymore with these companies that, unless I have to, like there is a threshold where like, look, Apple makes an iPhone, and for as unethical as these iPhones and batteries come about, like if you got something better, hand it to me, right? But at this point, it's like whatever. But for the most part, if customers can choose, they will. And it's pretty interesting to look at that kind of dynamic when you look at jobs theory.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Bud Light and Dylan Mulvaney
Yeah,
is a
whatever you think
prime
of that.
example of this. Oh, well, okay. So we can go there. So I'll try to avoid getting on my soapbox, I guess.
Sure, dude.
If we're just calling balls and strikes about the strategy of this, it was the most awful strategy they could have implemented. It sales in Bud Light in many places are down 50%. Their stock lost 7 billion in market cap. in the first week of since the controversy. And they managed to somehow simultaneously piss people off on both sides of the aisle because they didn't stand by Dylan Mulvaney after the controversy hit.
Right. So yeah. They didn't fire. Last I heard, it was a leave of absence or something. They basically said like, hey, you got to get out of here for a minute.
Yeah. So if you look at it, right, and you ask,
yeah,
what is the job that people are hiring Bud Light to do?
Yeah.
People aren't hiring Bud Light to get them drunk. It's light beer. Like right. there are a million different jokes about it might as well be water.
Yeah.
So people are hiring Bud Light to help them unwind, to not get engaged in these social issues. It's like, I heard a story of a guy, he was going to a wedding. And yeah. He had the option of drinking a Bud Light or a Miller or of drinking for a toast. Right. Uh-huh. And he was like, okay, what am I going to drink? Well, there's Miller Light and there's Bud Light. I don't want anything that's going to get me drunk. I don't want anything that's going to be super heavy. It's got to be alcohol because that's the tradition. So let's go with a Miller Light because I don't want people asking me all night about the Dylan Mulvaney controversy.
Yeah. Some people they abandoned their like own customer base essentially, right?
Right. So people aren't hiring Bud Light to get involved in these politics. It's a tool to help them unwind. Yeah. Right. And yeah. So
very interesting to think about. Yeah.
They've essentially said, nope, we don't understand the job. We're cutting that job off because we're not here to help you unwind. We're here to engage in politics and get you even more wound up. And like you can't make this stuff up. Like it's literally what they were doing.
And I think it's interesting that you noticed. Well, and I think it's very poignant that you mentioned the fact that like they made everybody mad. And like when you try to make, you know, they just made everybody mad. Cause yeah, they didn't back it up. Like, cause at some point you gotta be like, look, if we're going to go down this path, there's really no return. Like if we're going to go, we gotta go. Right. And I feel like that, by the way, is kind of a mindset that you have to have, like you've got to go full into it, right? Like A/B test or whatever, but typically your A/B testing copy, right? Not entire marketing strategy. I'm going to A/B test this landing page, right? Like what words convert back. Not if I'm, you know what I mean? Cause that's a pretty, you know, that's a choice. That's a decision at that point. And I think it's really funny that, yeah, when you try to abandon like your customer that, you know, and like I said, like when you're that big, you know, strategy at a company like that level is like, I don't know, you know, I was really surprised when they took that because it was just a weird turn, man. And
it was a weird turn.
I was like very strange. Not because I'm like, I don't get political. Like I'm actually probably more in the middle. And even for me, I was just like, yeah, that was kind of a weird turn.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. To have someone who didn't understand what March Madness is start sponsoring the beer of March Madness. Okay. You know,
that was a weird move.
And it's totally destroyed all of their goodwill. Like this point, Budweiser is probably going to have to shelve Bud Light for like a decade.
They're going to have to wait until people forget for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And this has been such a divisive issue that it's going to be a good long time, but this is where I start feeling empathy and a little bit of sympathy for the Bud Light management, right? Because this was not a decision that their CMO made. This was a decision that it was like the director of social media marketing made, and the CMO said, hey, we're seeing sales slip, so we need to grow our market. And this woman says, okay, let's see if we can grow our influence outside of the traditional frat boy kind of image. And so what, you know, the average person thinks, well, let's go completely to the other side of the aisle here And let's look at this from this political stance, right? But so jobs theory, if you look at it through the lens of jobs theory and you say the job is that it's these people who are not, you know, not heavy drinkers. They're just social drinkers and they're looking for a way to unwind.
Yeah.
That gives you the key to your marketing messaging that will expand your market or expand your sales, because right now they're probably not competing with Bud Light isn't competing with Miller Lite per se. They weren't. Yeah. They were competing with other drinks that are light on the alcohol side, but are a way to unwind. They're also competing with things that other people do at the end of the day to unwind. So it's like, you know, some people, when they unwind, they go home and they pop a beer and they watch baseball. Other people, when they unwind, they go to the gym. Other people, when they unwind, they do this, that, or the other. And so if you understand that job and you understand that I'm not competing with the traditional people in my segment, but I'm competing with other uses for this, then you can start saying, hey, you know what? Instead of vaping, why don't you try a Miller Lite or a Bud Light?
Yeah, dude, the whole marketing angle. I mean, when you really look at it from a point of like, I want to help somebody, I want to focus on that one person. I think that's the one thing, you know, I got kind of robbed when I learned sales, because they didn't really teach us a lot about marketing. And I know a lot of marketers who would say the opposite as well, right? Like, we learn marketing, but can't close a screen door in a windstorm, right? And so you're like, you know what I mean? So, but when I learned copywriting, it was like, you know, write for that one person. You're writing for like that one person who's going to hear it. And that's when I remembered some of my philosophy. So my background was like, I originally started school with as a philosophy degree. And I was like really close to graduating with like a philosophy and theology degree. And then I switched to accounting and business, and that was it. But it was funny because I remember reading, are you familiar with Joseph Campbell? Like, do you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Hero's Journey, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Power of Myth. Well, it's funny because that is like a really cool way to think about. Yeah. I think the biggest buzzword that I hate in marketing is storytelling. It pisses me off. And the reason it makes me mad is because like your story, I mean, like it's not like a commodity. Like it's not a story isn't supposed to be like, you know, like written, like it's a flow thing. It's like everybody knows when like a story's bullshit. That's why storytelling is like really powerful, but also like really dangerous. Cause if you mess up the story, like if people get a whiff that this is bullshit, you've gone back quite a bit. Right. And so, you know, when you're in selling, when you're doing that jobs thing, like people want to see themselves in this story, that they're like, I get that. They're like, you know, when you get somebody who just like, you know, falls back and they're like, holy shit, that's me, dude. Like that's when I feel like you've got a really good like footing on how to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. And this going back a little bit, that's why those interviews are so powerful, right?
Yeah.
Because you're able to contextualize things and then you can tell the story. See, yeah. I'll give you an example. So one thing that my interviews has brought to light recently is that a lot of the business owners that I work with, for whatever reason, vacations bring out this thought that I need to hire a consultant or I need to stop doing what I'm doing. So, you know, two stories that reflect this was, there was one guy who was saying, you know, I went on this 4-day weekend with my family and I worked the whole time, didn't enjoy a lick of it.
Yeah.
And it's the following week, it's a Friday afternoon, and I'm just sitting at home and I'm thinking, why am I doing this to myself? I'm not going to be able to enjoy this. And he got pretty damn near suicidal. Like it was pretty intense. And he was like, he just went dark from his company for a week while he had to figure all of this out. On a lighter note, the other story was this woman, she goes on this extended cruise with her family. And she's at the front of the cruise ship because she's trying to get signal. And that's where the best signal
is. Yeah.
So that she can do her work. And this little old Asian couple comes up to her and they say, you know, you work a lot. don't you? And she just has this moment where she's like, yeah, I do. I got to figure this out. So she ended up, instead of hiring a consultant, instead of, you know, figuring out how to offload things, she just gave her entire company over to her employee.
Yeah.
And this other guy, he ended up, he brought in some consultants and he gave part ownership to his operations manager. And she basically leads all of the operations side and he does biz dev. But, you know, the insight that I got from that, the stories that I can tell now are grown by a massive amount, because I can say, you know, you're probably reading this and you're on vacation right now. And you're sitting there and you're thinking, why the heck am I sitting here? It's on a beach in Florida. The sun is shining, but I'm doing work.
Yeah,
because I have to deliver. Like, I can't fail my customers. I can't fail my team, right? It gives me all of this insight that I can use to create stories that actually connect with people.
Yeah.
Instead of just regurgitating storyline number two.
Right. Yeah. That's absolutely very true. I really appreciate that. And Zach, I appreciate your time, my friend. Before I let you go, where can everybody find you? How can they get a hold of you and follow you and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So, I am on all the Twitters. I'm on, YouTube. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. If they search for Homeric Consulting, like Homer, like Homer Simpson. So Homeric Consulting, they'll find me, or they can just go to my website, businesslegendconsulting.com, and they'll be able to find me there.
Dude. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me, Zach.
Yeah. My pleasure. Now, Dalton, I hope you don't mind.
Yeah.
I've prepared a special offer for your listeners, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
If not, we can totally cut this part.
No, let's do it. We can
totally cut this part. But, so I've been working with these higher level businesses for a long time, and I want to come down and start working with these smaller businesses. So I put together a special offer, where basically we're going to help them zero in on who their target audience is based off of who is their most profitable, and start getting the wheels turning so that they can learn what that job is that those customers are hiring them to do. So normally I charge $3,000 for this. It's a really great offer that I've put together, but, for your listeners, and I'll give you a link to this, but if they use code EPIC23 at the checkout, I'll give them $500 off.
Oh, cool, man. Well, that's awesome, dude. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Absolutely, man.